Okay, the Book of Habakkuk. It's only three chapters, and two of them are fairly short. So we may be reading just parts of that, but interesting here that Habakkuk is a little different than most of the prophets, because he has a conversation with the Lord.
That's what I loved about it.
And it's kind of neat, because the other prophets prophesied of coming events and this type of thing, and yet Habakkuk actually had a conversation with God. And he was complaining about all the terrible things going on during his lifetime and in Judah. Of course, we know that Israel is gone now, and Judah is the only one left, but they didn't learn a whole lot seeing the demise of Israel. It didn't rub off on them a whole lot, except in one king's reign. But it's very, very interesting that Habakkuk has this conversation and complains about the things that are going on. And God actually answers him. And not just one time, but after God answered him in his first complaint, then Habakkuk had a second complaint, and God answered him about that too. So it was kind of an interesting book, exceptional in a lot of ways. Habakkuk is the eighth book of study that we are doing on the minor prophets. There's four more left to go, and we'll probably be able to cover one book per lesson, with the exception of Zechariah, which has 14 chapters. And while most of the prophets we've studied, major prophets as well as the minors, usually have information recorded about themselves, their time that they prophesied, their hometown, their occupation. Some of them shepherds, some of them, not too many of them were professional prophesiers, but their tribes, most of them have the tribe of Levi, or a tribe of this, tribe of that, their parents, the son of this guy, and these grandparents, and so forth like that. The only information we have on Habakkuk is really a real solid information is he is referred to in 1:1 as the prophet. So we assume that this is his profession. This is what he does. Does anybody have an idea of where he might be from or might be living at the time of these of his prophecies? We know he's not in Israel, don't we? Because Israel is no more. They've been carried off by whom?
Syria.
I'm sorry?
Assyria?
Assyria, yeah. They were carried off by Assyria. And that's who the power is right now, isn't it? Assyria is the world power and controls what goes on in the world that they knew it back in those days. What did they do to the people of Israel?
Oppressed them.
They destroyed them, didn't they? They were very, very cruel, vicious people. And because of Israel's disobedience to God and their idolatry and whatnot, they were carried away by Assyria. And they were assimilated into various cultures away from the land of Israel. And so it's no more. All their cities have been destroyed. And so we know that Habakkuk is from the land of Judah. Most people think because of the prophecies that he is talking about, that is primarily the Babylonians or the Chaldeans, the same way, same people, that he is prophesying from the city of Jerusalem. And we don't know, and it's not mentioned, on what tribe he's from. However, the last chapter, chapter 3, is in the form of a song. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, my Bible commentary referring to Habakkuk says that the rabbinical writers have Habakkuk as a member of the tribe of Levi.
Yes, and I had that. Where they get that is that, even though it's not mentioned distinctly, is that chapter 3 is in the form of a song. And the tribe of Levi is the one who provided singers and musicians for the temple. And so that's where they get this idea, and it certainly bears some fruit there, that he's from the tribe of Levi. Okay. His frequent mention of Babylon and their rise to power puts him in the early part of the reign of Jehoiakim, around 625 to 606 B.C., but most likely around 607 B.C. Babylon at that time, during this period of time, they are sweeping westward. They've not yet reached Judah. They have defeated the Assyrians. They have put Egypt into a weak spot. But so they are the rising power in that region. And so if he indeed is during this period of time, 625, 607, then he is contemporary with Jeremiah and Zephaniah. So let's look at the timeline that we are talking about. We'll spend a little bit there. In 639 BC, Josiah becomes king. And he ruled until 608. Was he a good king, bad king? Anybody?
I'm going to say bad king, because they all were.
Well, there were several kings after Hezekiah, and Josiah was the last of the faithful kings. He was the one that tried, he was Ahaz's son, I believe. And he ruled for quite a long time, but he was the last good king of the land of Judah. This was when Zephaniah prophesied, so he's our next study that we'll be looking at, but we know that he'll be during the profitable time of Josiah. The Assyrians at that particular time were the power, and they lasted. Babylon broke away from them in 625, and then eventually Assyria disappeared. I think I mentioned this a week or two ago. I'm not sure, but Assyria for a long time was so completely destroyed by God that people thought for many, many years, hundreds of years, that there was no such people named the Assyrians, and there was no real Nineveh. And that wasn't until the 1800, early 1800s before they discovered some of the writings and tablets and so forth like that relating to the Assyrian Empire. So I thought that was kind of interesting. God destroyed them so completely. And the one who did that was the Babylonians. Josiah's son, Jehoahaz, was the next in line in 608, and he lasted a whole 3 months. And he started rebelling against Egypt, and so they came and got him and hauled him off to Egypt, and he died there. After him was Jehoiakim, and he reigned from 608 to 597. He was certainly a wicked king, wasn't he? In 606 BC, Babylon invaded Judah and took captives and put the Judeans, the land of Judah, under conscription, and they had to pay Babylon a fee each year. Then in 597, Jehoiachin reigned for 3 months, and he rebelled against Babylon, and so, and while he actually was being a traitor, he was talking to the Egyptians, and Babylon found out about it, so they went down there and took him to Babylon, and he never returned. So then in 597 to 586 was Zedekiah. And he did basically the same thing, so they came and got him, took him to Babylon, and he never returned. And then in 586 BC, Jerusalem was burned up and destroyed, desolated. Let's look at chapter, go ahead. Somebody have something to say? Chapter 1, verse 1 to 4. This is the message that was given to Habakkuk, the prophet. Lord, I continue to help, ask for help. How long are you going to ignore me? I cry out to you about the violence, but you don't save us. Why do you let me see wrong things like this? Why do you put up with evil? People are destroying things and hurting others while I'm looking. Right in front of me, they are arguing and fighting. People are not forced to obey the teachers. What is that? Forced to obey what teachers?
Old Testament law.
Yeah, the Old Testament law. No one receives a fair trial. Evil people gain while good people lose. The judges no longer make fair decisions. Does that sound familiar? Boy. Getting all this information now on the internet, the news about all these judges that are being indicted and dismissed and all that stuff, investigated.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, nothing different, is it? Yeah, just like back in those days. So we find Habakkuk's complaint here. He complains about his own nation being destroyed by a nation even more wicked than than Judah. And Habakkuk just, he couldn't see the difference, the justice there. And so he's complaining to God about all the evil that's going on. So what does the Lord say? Somebody read verse 5 through 11.
Look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days you would not believe if you were told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They are dreaded and feared. Their justice and authority originate with themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards and keener than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping down to devour. All of them come for violence. Their horde of faces moves forward. They collect captives like sand. They mock at kings, and rulers are a laughing matter to them. They laugh at every fortress and heap up rubble to capture it. Then they will sweep through like the wind and pass on, but they will be held guilty, they whose strength is their God.
What is your translation?
New American Standard.
Yeah. What are you reading, Anne?
Oh, New King James. Is that what yours is?
Okay.
I have the New American Standard.
I'm simple-minded, so I like the Children's International Bible.
I need to get...
It's nice and clean and
clean.
Simple and...
Get that.
Get one of those. No these and thous and those and all that kind of stuff. And well, I kind of like it, so I use that most of the time. I feel sometimes like I'm about 5 or 6 years old when I read it. But it's very clear and very simple. And so I use that pretty much all the time. And, but yeah. So he's talking about the Babylonians. He's telling Habakkuk here that he said, boy, let me tell you, something's coming up here I'm going to bring, and you're not going to believe it, even if you see it with your own eyes. And this is what's going to happen, and these are the people that I'm going to cause to rise up. And then he talks a little bit about the Babylonian people and their armies and how cruel and vicious they are as they sweep across the land like locusts. He even talks about their horsemen that are coming from far away. Well, Babylon wasn't that far from Assyria. So what do you think he might be talking about here? I think he's talking about mercenaries. You know, even during Revolutionary War here in the United States, England had mercenaries that they used. They had Germans that kind of operated on their own, but they were vicious people and cruel people. And the British used them here in the United States during the Revolutionary War. They were hired warriors. And so this is what happened here, I think, is they had people that came to fight for a spoils. And this is where he talks about their armies coming from a long ways away. But he says that they're like grains of sand. There's so many of them. And they sweep up to past cities, bypass cities. They come up on fortified cities and they build ramps. Anybody ever see the picture of Masada? Masada shows from this, the top of Herod's summer palace, is what it was. It's built by Herod, and it's up on top of a mountaintop. And there was not any way to get up to it, with the exception of a narrow path, which, and some rebels, the Jewish rebels, got up there. And the only way that the Roman army could get up there was this pathway, and it was blocked. And so they spent a couple of years building a ramp, and you could, to this day, from the pictures from Masada, you can look down and you can see this ramp that they built up. It took them 2 years to build this, to move rocks and dirt and all that stuff to build up a ramp so they could get up there to Masada. Well, that's the same thing that they did when they came up against a walled city. What was Nineveh? The wall was 100 feet tall. So you had to build quite a ramp to get up there, and especially under duress, where you had people shooting at you and pouring oil on you and all kinds of stuff. But they still managed to do it in Nineveh. Well, this is what the Romans did. And you can still see the outline of their encampment down in the valley, even to this day, in modern pictures. So it's kind of interesting that they spent that time. And this is what the Babylonians did when they came up on a walled city. They just built a ramp on it, destroyed it, and went on. And they were just like, they left nothing behind. And so Habakkuk is complaining about these people and or the destruction that is going on, the hatefulness and so forth. And God is telling him what's going to happen. I'm not sure that he would believe it. You know, I mean, he couldn't comprehend it. But he knew that the Babylonians were vicious and nasty people. So, anyway, let's read verses 1:12 through 2:1. Who wants to do that?
Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We will not die. Thou, O Lord, hast appointed them to judge, and thou, O Rock, hast established them to correct. Thine eyes are too pure to approve evil, and thou canst not look on wickedness with favor. Why dost thou look with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why art thou silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Why hast thou made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things without a ruler over them? The Chaldeans bring all them up with a hook, drag them away with their net, and gather them together in their fishing net. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they offer a sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their fishing net. Because through these things their catch is large and their food is plentiful. Will they therefore empty their net and continuously slay nations without sparing? I will stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart, and I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me and how I may reply when I am reproved.
Yeah. So now that God has told Habakkuk what he's going to do and who he's going to use, it's kind of shook him up a little bit, didn't it? He says, "Oh, you're using people that are more wicked than we are, you know, to accomplish your purpose." And he says, "These people, they like using nets to scoop up fish, and because they got so many nice fish, they bow down and worship the net." We see this all the time in some of the other studies. They take a piece of wood and hire a guy to carve out a little deal. They cover it over with gold or silver, and then they bow down to it. Or some guy gets a rock and chisels a face out, and then he bows down to it. When you really think about that, it's about as dumb as you can get. But they lost contact, and of course the Babylonians never did until later on when Nebuchadnezzar comes along, and then they changed a little bit, but they were eventually destroyed. So anyway, Habakkuk, he's going to sit down, and he's going to stand on the tower there, and he's going to wait and see what kind of response the Lord has to his complaint. And then in rest of chapter 2, we're going to find out exactly what the Lord's answer is. So, in 2, somebody read chapter 2, 2 through 4.
Then the Lord answered me and said, "Write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it, for the vision is yet for an appointed time. But at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith."
What's the Lord saying here? It's going to come, guaranteed, but it may not come for a while. But the message that I'm giving you is going to be true. That it seems like a long time maybe before it happened, but be patient. Wait for it. How about us today? When we offer a prayer or about the wishes we'd like to see or the prayers that we offer to the Lord doesn't come true overnight. What happens then?
Get impatient.
Yeah, we get a little impatient. Man, yeah, is the Lord really going to answer us? You know, that type of thing. How are we going to know whether the Lord's answered our prayer?
Because we'll know, and we have to have faith. That's what he's saying, is follow the faith, be faithful.
That's exactly right, and this is what basically the whole book of Habakkuk is about. It's about having faith. And it's not any different today than it was back in those days. Sometimes we get impatient, sometimes we don't understand why God does certain things. I think God, you know, it's my personal opinion, I think God has an incredible sense of humor. And I think you see it in biblical scripture from time to time. Some of the things that seem funny to me that, you know, on how he answers prayer or how he accomplishes certain things. And I think that's why God instilled a sense of humor in most of it. I run across a few people who didn't get that blessing, but... You okay?
I'm doing great.
Okay. Just check. Okay. So...
Don't take it personal. She looks like that at me every time I'm in the...
Does she really? Oh, my goodness sake. Somebody read verse 5 through 17. Chapter 2.
Moreover, wine betrays. An arrogant man is never at rest. He enlarges his appetite like Sheol, and like death, he is never satisfied. He gathers all the nations to himself. He collects all the peoples for himself. Won't all of these take up a taunt against him, with mockery and riddles about him? They will say, "Woe to him who amasses what is not his. How much longer? And loads himself with goods taken in pledge. Won't your creditors suddenly arise, and those who disturb you wake up? Then you will become spoil for them. Since you have plundered many nations, all the peoples who remain will plunder you, because of human bloodshed and violence against lands, cities, and all who live in them. Woe to him who dishonestly makes wealth for his house, to place his nest on high, to escape from the reach of disaster. You have planned shame for your house by wiping out many peoples and sinning against your own self. For the stones will cry out from the wall, and the rafters will answer them from the woodwork. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and founds a town with injustice." 12 or 17?
17.
"It is not from the Lord of hosts that the peoples labor only to fuel the fire, and countries exhaust themselves for nothing. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord's glory, as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives his neighbor's drink, pouring out your wrath, and even making them drunk, in order to look at their nakedness. You will be filled with disgrace instead of glory. You also drink and expose your uncircumcision. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter disgrace will cover your glory. For your violence against Lebanon will overwhelm you. The destruction of animals will terrify you, because of your human bloodshed and violence against lands, cities, and all those who live in them."
Okay, so who's he talking about here?
His city.
Is he talking about Judah?
Yeah.
Okay, now remember, he's answering Habakkuk's complaint. Who's he talking about here? He's talking about Babylonians, isn't he? And telling Habakkuk, he's going to use the Babylonians to destroy Judah and carry the people off. But because of their viciousness and their cruel capabilities, he's going to punish the Babylonians. And he's describing in chapter 2, in these verses 5 to 17, he's talking about because of their cruelty and what they have done to other peoples, he is going to end up by destroying the people of Babylon, but he's also going to save his people. And so we come to that part of, I'm able to read this, believe it or not. I scribbled it, and I'm actually able to read my own writing. That's kind of it. Okay, so in chapter 3, we find Habakkuk's prayer to God to do again his wonders that he had done in the past. What is he talking about? Wonders that God has performed in the past. How many years now have they had God's protection as a people? All the way from Egyptian bondage. And he's talking about all the wonderful things, miracles, and good works that God had done for the people in the past. He's saying, why don't you do again those same wonders that you did way back in history? You know, he knows God is capable, and he has faith that God would do something like that if he wants to. So in the last part of this chapter 3, Habakkuk is just resigned to God's plans, and he has faith about the sincerity and the security of God's people, because God has promised him. And the main lesson in this book is what Kirsten said. Men shall live by faith. Find that in chapter 2, verse 2 to 4. And it says, the Lord answered me, write down what I show you. Write it clearly on stone tablets, so whoever reads it can run to tell others. It's not yet time for the message to come true, but that time is coming soon. The message will come through. It may seem like a long time before it happens, but be patient and wait for it. These things will happen. They will not be delayed. See, the nation that is evil and trust in itself will fail. But those who do right, because they trust in God, will live. And so Habakkuk takes this to heart, doesn't he? How do we define faith? Anybody? How do we define faith?
Confidence in things not seen.
Yeah. I ran across a comment that says, faith is the ability to feel so sure of God, no matter how dark the day, there's no doubt as to the outcome. For God's people, there is a glorious future. It may be a long way off, but it is sure. So in the midst of gloom and despair, we see Habakkuk as a big-time optimist. Isn't that what we should be? Do we see days of gloom and despair? Yeah. I tell you, the last few days I have been so in despair over this moving mess. This is not going to happen again. And I moved a lot when I was a kid. My dad was a preacher, and when I went into the service, I had to, because of a security clearance I had to have, I had to list every place I had ever lived. I was 22 years old, and I listed 22 places.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't hardly believe it. I finally had this gal ask me, this captain, she says, It's hard to believe that you're 22 years old and you lived in 22 places. And I said, well, you probably don't understand, but my dad was a preacher. Oh, yes, I do understand. And back in those days, preachers were pretty itinerant. I don't know about my dad. I think he probably stepped on a few people's toes and was always looking for a congregation that was hard up and needed some help. So we ended up in places like Sunnyside in Washington and Cottage Grove and places like that. But, okay, next week we're going to start on what book?
Zephaniah,
yeah. So, might read the first couple of chapters there. This is a long book. And we'll have some fun with this. Anybody else have any comments or anything like that before we close out?
Well, I want to know where the verse is, the evidence of the things hoped for or something, faith not seen. What is that chapter?
Oh,
evidence of things hoped for.
The mind is drawn a blank.
Hebrews 11:1.
Thank you. Hebrews 11:1.